Episode 34 of Speak Beastie for April the 9th, 2017.
I'm Shannon.
I'm Michael.
And I'm Eleanor.
And that's all you get. That's the set.
Yeah.
For today. But what a cool set of people.
A nice little smile. Hey, Elena pointed out something to me that she didn't realize while recording the last episode. It was the first episode without a main host. So basically the first episode without me or Ariel or Aaron.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Oh,
a milestone. And it only took how many episodes? What episode are we on?
34. She just said it.
I know. I wasn't listening.
Took 33 episodes.
33
You're like,
episodes.
It took 33 episodes to not have Shannon or Ariel
to
on.
Get rid of you, finally.
Yeah.
So dedicated.
Well, but Shannon, you haven't been on in a little while.
Yeah, in like two episodes.
That's a long time in podcast land.
I work 12:30 to 9 now, so.
Oh, you're working.
And it's 45 minutes away, so it's really like 11:30 to 10.
Oh my goodness. Well, yeah. Despite being so far away from Speak Beastie, did you still manage to get a copy? Did you finally get your copy of Fantastic Beasts?
I did. Because, yeah, I went to Target all ready to get it, and they were sold out. And then the big screen on the wall started playing the ad for it. Okay, they weren't sold out of Fantastic Beasts. They were sold out of the special one that looks like the case, and I wanted that.
Of course. Oh, right. That's the best one.
And they started playing the ad on the wall for it. And I was like, yeah, I'm trying to buy that. And I looked it up and it was sold out in every Target Orlando.
Oh, my gosh.
And this was days after it had officially come out. I just wasn't able to go until whenever that was.
I guess Orlando, Sunday. That would make sense. It is kind of like a Harry Potter epicenter. So
then I rush shipped it. And it arrived yesterday, but I haven't had the chance to watch it.
But have you played with the case part?
I haven't. I haven't actually opened it.
Oh, it is terribly.
It's still
satisfying.
The package. It's Schrodinger's Fantastic Beasts. It could be in there. It could not be in there.
I got lucky, and my roommates and I recently discovered that we have a Super Target here in Austin, just north of us, which we had no idea, because when you type in Target on Google Maps, it doesn't like specify if it's a Super Target or not, and we had never been in one either, and so we went in and we found, like, I was looking and we didn't find any, like, it looked like they were all sold out, and we were in there for like half an hour, like maybe even an hour, and before we left, right as we were leaving, I saw like a special display that had it by the registers, and there was one left, so I grabbed the last one. So,
what makes a Target a Super Target?
What makes a Target a Super Target? It's basically just like an enlarged a Target with an Engorgio charm on it. It's like Newt. Okay. If you walked into Newt's case and you were like, "Whoa, that's this Target's way bigger on the inside than I was expecting."
Because it used to be that like it had groceries, but now every Target has groceries.
Oh yeah, yeah. It has a bigger grocery section and like a way bigger entertainment center and stuff. By
the
way,
Targets in Orlando have like a theme park section.
Oh, jeez.
So it's Disney and Harry Potter stuff.
Oh, of course.
Basically.
Of course. Yeah. Well, and just to be clear, listeners, we are not sponsored by Target, but hey, Target, if you're listening, give us a ring.
Does Eleanor, do you have Target?
Yeah, but it's not, I don't think it's the same as the US one. Like, ours is kind of like a clothing store. I don't think it's the same.
But Eleanor, do they have that edition of Fantastic Beasts in Australia with the special case?
That is a great question, and I don't know. Probably. I would assume so, but I think there's a UK edition and an American edition again, right? So.
Yeah, I think so. The edition with the case is exclusive to Target over here. You can't get it anywhere else here.
Yeah, I would assume that we don't have it.
Aw.
I'm gonna check the biggest bookstore in Australia and I'll let you know.
And if they don't have it, no one has it.
Yeah, pretty much. I don't know. We don't generally get an amazing amount of Harry Potter stuff in Australia. Just putting that out there. It's really sad. You guys are always talking about merch, and I'm always like, what is merch? What is this thing? I have the books, and I found a wand. But, like,
you just picked it up off the ground.
She's like, I'm not sure if this is an official wand or just a really pretty stick.
But, but yeah.
No, the wand found her.
Yeah, there
exactly,
you go.
Right? Exactly.
Very nice.
Yeah.
I like that way of looking at things.
Oh, no, we do have it. Oh, that's good to know. Okay, we do have it. We can get the case. It's a thing. Yes.
Oh,
yay.
Get exactly. It.
It doesn't look like we can, but the thing on Google said we could. No, I don't know. You know what? I'm just going to definitively say I don't know.
Well, I have it, but I haven't even watched it since I got it. So I've mostly just enjoyed the slipcover case. That's all I've gotten out of it so far.
The prettiness.
Yeah. Well, the day this episode comes out, so this is completely useless to listeners, but I'm going to 221 Beacon this weekend, which is a Sherlock Holmes convention, but there's other stuff there too, and I'm going to be on a panel about Fantastic Beasts at 10 a.m. on Sunday.
That sounds so cool. Oh my gosh.
If you're in Atlanta and you've somehow listened to this episode before 10 a.m. on Sunday, and you also have a ticket to 221 Beacon, you can go.
That sounds awesome. Oh my gosh, how cool.
And I was emailing the people who are also on the panel, and I was like, oh, I'm on this podcast about Fantastic Beasts. It's called Speak Beastie. And then this other girl was like, oh, I've been a guest on Aloha Mora.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh no, you're gonna expect me to like be professional. And then she like started listening to Speak Beastie, and I was like, oh no, she's probably listening right now.
I'm sure. And I'm sure she loves it because it's fantastic. Yeah. So to speak.
Wow.
Ba-dum-tsh.
And now a message from our sponsors. Hey you! Yes you! The magical cats and dolls waving your wands like bean shooters in a caper. Looking to be on the up and up about Newt Scamander, famous zoologist and world traveler? No need for gossip at the juice joint. Just tune your ears to Speak Beastie. And now for as little as $1 a month, you can make Speak Beastie the Neasles Meow. Support the show at patreon.com and suddenly you're the big cheese, the real McCoy, with exclusive access to swell sneak peeks, bloopers, and behind-the-scenes features. But wait, there's more! Sponsors can also beat their gums at the joint with access to the Speak Beastie Common Room on Facebook. Now you're really on the clean sweep, flyboy! Get a wiggle on to patreon.com/speakbeastie to learn more about becoming a sponsor today. It's the Billy Wiggs Knees, and how!
And now for the Phoenix Register.
She's gonna hate you.
I know, she's gonna hate me so much. What else do I have to do? Oh, wait. And I also have to be like, you guys, I'm crying because the news is beautiful. It's so happy, and I'm crying. Ariel, you get full permission to do whatever ridiculous impression of me that you want next time you're on.
She's gonna be like, no, because he does it so good.
No, she hates my impression of her.
I think just you do impressions in general better.
Last time we were both on an episode together, I did an impression of her, and she was like, wait, this is how you do an impression of me. What are you doing, Michael Hartley? It's just like, I'm sorry, Ariel. I apologize. So yes, Ariel, all rights and privileges to do your impression, your best Michael Hartley impression on the next episode.
Yeah, I hope she does.
But as we...
The actual news.
But as we head into the Phoenix Register, we have a lot of news with the release of the Fantastic Beasts Blu-ray, DVD, all of that good stuff that you can watch the movie at home with. A lot of the cast appeared at the studio tour in the UK, and one of MuggleNet's staff, and also one of Speak Beastie's rotating hosts, Claire, was there to do a lot of interviews, and a lot of articles came out, and we'll start with one that I think a lot of people will enjoy. Both David Yates and Catherine Waterston were there, and they had a few things to say about a particularly divisive, much talked about deleted scene from Fantastic Beasts. The deleted scene where Graves and Tina have a little chat, and Graves wipes a little bit of mustard off of Tina's face. Take it as you will. That's up for you to interpret, listeners. But Yates actually said that he loved that scene. It was one of his favorites. But it really didn't feel like that was going to be fulfilled in any other part of the movie, and that's why it was cut. It was, as he put it, it was setting up a false promise. And Catherine Waterston followed that up by saying that she really liked that scene because she kind of felt like that explained more of Tina's attempts to kind of be ambitious at work and to kind of look her best around Graves and then kind of be totally tripped up when she realizes she had mustard on her face the whole time she was talking to him. But interestingly, she followed that up with saying that the scene later in the film, when he condemns them to death, as Catherine put it, I think it's a really heartbreaking moment for Tina, obviously, when he sentences her to death, not just because she doesn't want to die, which reasonable, but also because she never imagined that he would do such a thing to her. And in a way, it's that scene where he sentences them to death. That's the real kind of pull the mask off your face reveal scene, in a sense, because she discovers this person she looked up to is not so wonderful or admirable after all. And I thought that particular thought from Waterston was interesting, but because it kind of implies that the way she's phrasing it suggests that Grindelwald may have been Graves for a while, or that Graves and Grindelwald weren't very dissimilar as people. Which I don't know how to feel about that, because I think we've kind of worked ourselves up into a Graves-loving frenzy over over these last few episodes, for Graves is who he really is. So I don't know, ladies, how do you feel about that?
I don't know. I agree that the scene should not have been in the movie. Mm-mm. Because I like the thing that Yates said where there's not like a payoff.
Yeah.
Because yeah, there wouldn't really be.
Yeah, what would you do with that? Well, yeah, because the only other scene where they interact other than the one where he sentences them to death is the scene where her and Graves kind of face off with their with some magic.
And it's not like there's a lot of talking there.
Mm-hmm. He just says that thing where he's like, you always show up when you're least wanted or something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's hard to suggest what that relationship was if Graves wasn't Graves the whole time we saw him with Tina. I think for the sake of what the film was doing, it was fine to lose it, but that's why we have Blu-rays and DVDs, is so we can enjoy that kind of stuff. But interestingly, one thing that some fans did notice was not included, that is a common inclusion on special edition material: no blooper reel.
Because the Potter films are so known for their blooper reels.
Yeah, Warner Brothers sure loves to hold on to those, don't they? As Claire asked, could they have been perfect in every take? And Eddie Redmayne responded with, absolutely not. David Yates confirmed that there is indeed a blooper reel, and actually they want to save it up for films 2 or 3 and kind of come out with a compilation of bloopers, but I do definitely, I think...
So that you have to keep buying the Blu-rays and DVDs.
Hoping maybe this really, one.
Yeah, how badly do you want those bloopers, listeners? That's gonna be what determines that. But I think, I mean, Shannon, you're totally right. Warner Brothers has a tendency to really hang on to special features.
He's like, there is a blooper reel, and I'm like, so what, you've edited together? And we're like, no, let's keep it. just to personally offend me.
Maybe they're just messing with us and there isn't one.
Yeah, they actually were right on every take.
Yes, they were all
perfect. The first take was perfect. Yep. Eddie was being sarcastic. He was like, yeah.
Yeah, Eddie's first his first dance with your rumpin was just like, it was perfect. Nothing went wrong. Nobody
the crew
laughed.
Was in tears.
Could you imagine having to do that like 15 times?
Yeah, that definitely had to have been done more than once.
It would have been a workout.
Yes, it would have. All that rolling over and everything. So yes, there will be a blooper reel, we hope. Just like we got all those great blooper reels for Harry Potter in that Uber special edition. Just kidding. You paid $300 and you didn't get a blooper reel. And we do have some more pieces that were taken out that the cast and crew wanted to comment on. Kind of similar to our discussion about Tina and Graves. As we know and have known for a while, there was also a deleted scene where Jacob's, I believe it was his fiancée, Mildred, leaves him after he gets home from failing to get the loan for the bakery. And as David Yates put it, the scene was basically there to make you feel bad for Jacob. But then in the editing process, they realized that basically, as he put it, Dan Fogler kind of out-acted the need for the scene. Because you already felt bad for Jacob in the scenes that preceded it. So that's why they cut it. And Dan Fogler said that he really liked the scene because he felt he was really green in it because it was one of his first scenes for the movie. And then as he put it, so when I saw it, I was like, oh, I'm actually able to button my jacket in this scene. Good for you, Dan. So... But I think we've already kind of discussed that we kind of felt like that scene wasn't necessary either.
Yeah.
No, if you ladies
and had... Yeah, because we already felt bad for him.
Well, yeah, it's just overkill. Didn't need to do
well,
that.
And as you guys...
But also, ahead, it was Shannon. Weird. Because it...
Yeah.
It makes you feel like he's just choosing Queenie as like an imitation of Mildred, and then you're just like, oh, and you sort of start feeling a bit odd about that whole relationship. Whereas like, yeah, you take that out, you just take out that incredibly awkward, oh god, I'm gonna have to start thinking about, you know, like the psychoanalysis of this kind of thing. So yeah, now it's just like, no, we can just enjoy Queenie and you know, just enjoy it, just be fine.
Yeah, basically both of these scenes that were taken out kind of did a favor for the female characters. Like, which is funny because nobody's saying that, but not having Tina kind of be pretty much trying to excel at her job purely to impress Graves is a good thing. And not having Jacob choose Queenie just because she looks exactly like Mildred is also a good thing. Yeah, so definitely some major improvements in those cuts. Who knows if those things will come back in future films or be brought up. I'm kind of, and that's the curious thing, I think, that we talked about with kind of the issues of rolling in canon and how that works, because maybe she had plans for that to be brought up later. Maybe she didn't. So.
Well, you know, in the sequel, when they launch their epic rescue mission to get Graves back.
It's all gonna come back to mustard.
Yes, mustard. Mustard is the key plot point. It was all about the mustard. Well, and
yeah, because she's like, because that was the real Graves in the mustard scene. So then when they find him, she's like, say one thing that only the real Graves would know about. He's like, mustard.
The mustard.
And they're like, it's him. Finally, it's him. We've saved you.
And speaking of sequel. The cast did Claire did her best to kind of pull a few bits of information out of the cast and crew about the sequel. No mentions of mustard, because of course that is a very integral plot point, so why would they? but the credit for that goes to Eleanor, by the way. If that ends up being a thing, we all have Eleanor to thank for the mustard thing.
Oh, thank you.
As Claire did ask them if there was any, what they were doing to prep. And interestingly, Eddie revealed, and this was Claire interviewed them around mid to late March. And interestingly, Eddie revealed that they still haven't seen the script yet. And we have had confirmation that the script is done, thanks to Rowling and Yates and Heyman. But the cast hasn't seen that script. But they are all, as Dan mentioned when he was actually on episode 28 of Speak Beastie, they're very eager to kind of go in and see what happens next. The other thing, Shannon, you'll appreciate this, is that Claire did ask them about the costumes because of the fear that the next movie will be set in a different season. But as Eddie put it, if we shoot in the summer or if that's when it's set, that does not mean that they're like, oh, we won't put you in 76 layers. as we know from the Harry Potter films, that's never stopped them. David Yates did confirm that there are going to be some amazing costumes. And Eddie brought up the piece about Newt's coat and the pockets that weren't used in the first film. And him and Yates are kind of hoping that that'll feature maybe in a future film. I know, Shannon, though, you're still holding out for that tea kettle.
Yes.
Listen, absolutely.
The climax is going to be him pulling that kettle out of his giant pockets and knocking Grindelwald over the head with it. And Dumbledore's just standing off to the side like, oh, okay. I thought I was going to, like, fight him, but if you're going to do that.
We'll get to all of that in our main discussion. There's certainly some things to talk about in relation to that. But before we get to that, a few more things. There was also a discussion with Pablo Grillo, I believe is his name, who was one of the animators on The Creatures of Fantastic Beasts. And as I was reading this article, I did not know, not only was Pablo a part of the series since Chamber of Secrets, and he also did what I consider to be some of the most phenomenal work for Prisoner of Azkaban, but he actually also did some of the animation on the demons in the Golden Compass movie. Which is one of the biggest highlights of the Golden Compass movie.
Yeah.
Listeners, if you know anything about that adaptation and have seen it, a few things fell flat there, but my goodness, the demons at the time were amazing. And that actually, that work did win an Academy Award. The only Oscar that film would have ever gotten anyway. Pablo kind of talked a little more about his work with the beasts. And I think that was interesting to know that he was a part of this process, because we were so worried about how the beasts, I think, would turn out compared to the work that was done in the Potter films, and how there was a lot of inconsistencies. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you've got like the first films that tended to go more towards practical effects versus the later films, which went full CGI. And Beasts definitely was more heavier on the CGI, but I think it did it in a way that we were all pretty happy with. So we've definitely grown to love a lot of the beasts.
I do love them. A lot.
And turning away a little more from the movies to the books, a big hullabaloo was raised in the Potter community over the new printing of Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, the new Scholastic edition, because it was missing an entire paragraph. Three sentences, to be exact, from the previous editions in the section about hippogriffs, which was spotted...
It's so funny because it's like, it doesn't matter at all. They're not new sentences, like, just somehow someone hit backspace.
Well, in fact, the fan who found it, who was named Michael, it was not me, to clarify, listeners, but Michael speculated that the paragraphs may have been accidentally lost when they were adding in the section right below the hippogriff about the hodag. So that may have been the oopsies. Like you said, Shannon, somebody hit backspace a little too hard. So that line went poof. Not only did it go poof from the solo editions of Fantastic Beasts, that also occurred in the box sets, where you get the entire Hogwarts library. But listeners, while Scholastic has offered to exchange the misprint copies for a proper edition, there is a lot of encouragement from the Potter community that you keep your misprint edition because it'll probably be worth something.
Oh, yeah, I'm keeping mine.
Yep, hold on to that. So, kind of like all of us who, you know, held on to our Lily James swap Goblet of Fire copies. The good times.
Oh, mine is falling apart.
So is mine. And they're not really worth a lot because there were a million of them that were printed.
Well, yeah. I was like, oh, it's nice that like we can send it back and get a new one for free, but I'm keeping it.
Oh, yeah.
I have the original copy, so I know what the three sentences are.
Well, I guess it would be slightly more comparable to Cuckoo's Calling and the whole Robert Galbraith bit.
Oh, man.
Yeah. But I think
to own one of those first editions
would be crazy. Yeah. But that pretty much wraps up the Phoenix Register and all the latest news. You can check out all of those news stories that we discussed over at MuggleNet.com.
Cool. And now for our post. So Crystal said on the last episode that you guys listed the headlines that were readable on the newspapers on the last episode. One of those was ancient wands unearthed in the Bois archaeological dig. In the past, it has been discussed.
Boise. Really? Yeah. I liked how you said Bois, though. I kind of want to
automatically assume.
I think we should rename it. But
yeah. Oh, it's in Idaho.
Yes. Boise, Idaho.
Oh, I don't understand America.
Okay. We should have an American read this.
Neither do we.
Boise. It's because the first time I ever heard the word, I always assumed it was Yosemite, like Vegemite, not Yosemite. anyway. Okay, so bizarre. Anyway, this is another one of those. So in the past, it has been discussed that wizards predated muggles to the Americas. What if the Elder Wand was one of those unearthed in Idaho? It would have happened shortly before all of the events of Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, and maybe they were already shipped and being reviewed by Makusa in New York, and Grindelwald comes across the lot when he inevitably escapes, recognizes what the wand is, and thereby becomes the owner of the wand. I just can't reconcile how he became the true master of it in this scenario unless he pried it from some wizard's dead hands. Thoughts? Also, you guys are awesome. Love the podcast. I'm really sorry, Crystal, but there's like this whole thing about how the Death Stick goes through, what was it, Emmerich the Evil, and who are all the other people like in Europe? So, probably not.
Someone could have then gone to Idaho.
I mean, maybe.
Yes, the great wizarding massacre of Boise, Idaho. Yeah. No, I'm kind of inclined to lean towards what you're saying, Eleanor, that that's probably not the case. But it's a fun theory. Dumbledore reveals kind of a fragmented map of the Elder Wand's travels through the centuries in the Tales of Beedle the Bard, Which you can pick up with your misprinted copy of Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them.
No, you can't pick up that misprinted copy anymore.
Yeah, now you can get a nice new copy with all three sentences included, thank goodness. But that's where you can kind of read that map. But Dumbledore does mention that there are holes in that kind of travel of the Elder Wand through, there's pretty big gaps. He does.
I mean, there are holes, but it's not like it's, you know, an archaeological find type hole.
No.
Like, it's not like 3,000 years hole.
Yeah. He kind of implied that, kind of like you said too, Eleanor, the implication is that it stayed in Europe. But, I mean, it's a cool idea. Of course, we know that, thanks to all of the build-up to Fantastic Beasts, we know that Slytherin's wand ended up in the U.S. Because his is the wand that sprouted a beautiful tree on the grounds of Ilvermorny. So it's not unheard of that wands end up
here's what
far
I
from
want.
Home.
I want Dumbledore, whoever's playing Dumbledore, and in his posh British accent, to have to say that Grindelwald found the Elder Wand in Boise, Idaho.
See, I've been
that
hearing
would be hilarious.
I've been hearing a lot of fan casting that people want Ewan McGregor for Dumbledore, which sure, whatever. I'll say yes just because Ewan McGregor's hot, but yeah. Why not? But that would be pretty funny to hear Ewan McGregor being like Boise.
He'd be an okay Dumbledore.
Idaho. Yes,
and it's really dramatic, and they're all like, "Ooh,
I know where you found that wand."
And somewhere, Crystal's like, "I told you guys, you doubted me."
Wouldn't that be interesting if? Because I feel like with the Potter movies, we have with the Fantastic Beasts movies, rather, we have this. Rare opportunity where Rowling kind of has to change up how she does clue giving. And it's more visually based than dialogue based. And I think it would be hard to do that kind of thing because for some reason people are very willing to recall details from books, but not from movies. And I think that would be hard to, you know, unless those scenes are just somehow incredibly iconic, people don't remember the finer details. So I think that's going to be more of a challenge. Like, really, nobody's going to be, like, we are the level of people who, of course, pause all of the stills of the headlines, but we've kind of had confirmation, too, from Mina Lima that they just make those things up.
Yeah.
Yeah, she just made up a few.
Yeah. Yeah, I think sometimes they may ask for her input, or if there's a key one, she'll put it in. But yeah, I think that might just be Mina Lima having some fun. But you're right, Eleanor. If this turns out to be right, Crystal, you win. You'll really have the claim on that one. I don't think anybody else is gonna lay stick to that.
I do like the idea of the ancient ones turning up. I just don't think it's going to be the Elder Wand.
Yeah.
Like, I think that could be really... That could still be really cool.
I'd be more inclined to think that some of the stuff that she's established on Pottermore might become important.
Oh, yeah.
Because she's done such an extensive job of building up Ilvermorny, and then we never even saw it. She did such extensive stuff with the history of the U.S. And I'm sure she's going to continue to do that with the other countries that are going to be featured. But I feel like there's more stuff being set in those pieces of writing that it might be worth paying attention to. Rather than Mina Lima's fun little, you know.
But you never headlines. Know.
Yeah, Wiz Jazz ended up being a thing, so that was in there. That was in the New York ghost. So it works. You never know.
All right. So for the main discussion, we're going to talk about the new edition of Fantastic Beasts, the book. It's based on a book, guys. Did you know? Yeah, this book called like Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. It's been out for like 15 years.
Oh, is that why they gave the movie such a ridiculous title? It's because they based it on the book?
So long.
Still wondering, side note, still wondering what the second and beyond movies will be titled.
I know.
You cannot title them all Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, colon, an additional second title.
We've like, already established it's going to be like Two Fantastic, Two Beasts. Fantastic Five, like, come on.
Beauty and the Fantastic Beast? I'll bring it back.
Yeah.
I'll always bring it back to Beauty and the Beast, guys. I'm in a Beauty and the Beast mood. I just saw it this weekend. That's all I want to talk about. That's a
So there's a new forward in this edition.
Dan Stevens is a fantastic beast. Am I right?
Oh my god.
Yum.
You just see that coming from a mile off. You just say,
But did you stop it? Did you stop it? No, you didn't.
I knew you needed to say it. I knew.
So there's a new forward in this edition, which is the biggest thing. I thought it was interesting that there's no more of Dumbledore's forward. That's just gone.
So they officially cut, because I don't have the new edition yet. I peeked at it at Barnes & Noble, and I read Newt's kind of revised forward, but I didn't notice that Dumbledore's was gone.
Yeah.
Mm.
I mean, that was only a couple pages, and it's mostly about, like, oh, this is for comic relief and muggles.
Well, you know, it would make sense to cut Dumbledore's forward, too, because it mentions, well, that, yes, but it also mentions that the forward goes into detail about why the edition that they are using is Harry's edition.
Yeah, that's true.
Which is
not anymore.
Boo. Yeah. Boo.
It's sad.
It is. I think this is meant to be more like the edition that Newt released, like,
maybe,
like an earlier edition.
Yeah, it's interesting. So, like, the beginning of the foreword, it has this, like, handwritten note in parentheses that says, to appear only in Four Wizards version. And then the end of the foreword has editor's notes. For Muggle Edition, usual stuff. Quote, obvious fiction, all good fun, nothing to worry about. Hope you enjoy it.
Yeah, that also kind of takes place of, like, that kind of takes place of Dumbledore's little bits at the end of his forwards, where he's just like, by the way, this is all fiction. Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it.
Don't even think about it. Yeah, it's cute. Now Rowling's editor is part of the Harry Potter canon.
I like it. I can't wait for them to get a movie. So the new forward is mostly like Jo covering her butt.
Yeah. We're trying to.
So, like, it says, following the declassification of certain secret documents kept at the Ministry of Magic, the Wizarding World has recently learned a little more about the creation of Fantastic Beasts and where to find them. You don't say. And then he's like, I'm not yet in a position to tell the full story of my activities. And I'm like, you don't say.
So this is a question. Are we going to get a new edition of Fantastic Beasts every time?
Oh, God, are you kidding? Of course we are. Oh, my God. This is like,
going to be ridiculous.
Can't they just do this one and then a new one in 10 years?
No, well, of course. That's what this is going to be. This is the equivalent of, like, the Harry Potter films being released as they came out on DVD, and then doing a big collector edition at the end with all of them. Like, this, that's inevitably what's going to happen. Is there's going to be we're all going to buy them because they might have a misprint. But yeah, there. I mean, Warner Brothers knows we'll buy that stuff. So yeah, there's got to be a new edition. That's too.
So basically, we're going to have six plus the first one editions of relatively the same book with occasionally new, well, like,
and they're gonna add more
creatures.
Beasts.
Yeah, So, like, this time six, what, six every time. So, by the end, we'll have 30 more beasts in it. But, like, it'll be a consecutive thing. This just seems very,
Well, we talked about something similar to this on Alohomora with the issue of Cursed Child. Apologies, listeners, for even bringing up Cursed Child here. Or at all, really. But,
how dare you?
I know. It's like a dirty house. Word. But we were kind of trying to suppose when the revised final script edition would come out, because it was kind of implied that it should have been out by now. But then we theorized that they're probably going to wait until the play opens on Broadway because it's just too good of an opportunity.
Yeah, they can capitalize on it more.
Exactly. So I'm sure, yes, that Warner Brothers has, their eyes have just seen dollar signs at the grandiose potential to just keep re-releasing this book. So yes,
Keep re-releasing the Harry Potter books with new information.
They can just release those with new illustrations and new covers and do this and that and the other. But
does this mean we keep getting new Mina Lima covers? Because that's okay.
Because the one thing that works, if you can work it out that way, is that isn't like Harry's edition is like the 50th or some edition. Like it's up there.
It's
so
like a 57th.
Yeah. So you could say that these are previous editions if you wanted to try and excuse it, which I'm sure somewhere in the writing of the future forwards they will.
It's okay because I'm going to buy them. So.
Yep. We will all have them all at some point. It's inevitable. I'm not condoning it, Warner Brothers, but I am saying I will do it. Doesn't make it okay, though.
I don't approve of your actions, but I'm still going to give you money.
Yes, but here's my money.
So, speaking of unnecessary books, Rita Skeeter apparently wrote a biography about Newt. And I would love to read that.
It's called
Man or Monster. Man or Monster, the Truth About Newt Scamander.
So that even like confuses things further, because Rita wasn't actively in journalism, we'd know, until probably around the, 80s? 70s? 80s? So
he's writing. This is a recent press report, according to him.
So he's writing from now.
Yes.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Because
things have been declassified.
Oh, God. It's so confusing.
Yeah, it's...
Oh, boy.
Well, and also, you know, he mentions it like, in 2001, Dumbledore and I were so happy about this edition. And it's Dumbledore was dead.
He was super dead.
Yeah.
Newt's, yeah, the next edition, Newt is like, I'm sorry, I'm bad at math.
I think fans, because we discussed this with... I believe we discussed this with our Speak Beastie listeners who hang out with us in the common room, our Patreon sponsors. But I think the excuse that we've kind of theorized, but it's a weak excuse, is that he was talking about Dumbledore's portrait. it's a stretch.
Sure.
We're trying our best to help you, Rowling. But my God.
Hey, to be fair, like, years are never mentioned in the actual Harry Potter books. We just kind of decided they were these years. And she was like, yeah.
Well,
sure,
the way it started was because of Chamber of Secrets, because Nick's death day, he said what year he died. So from that, people were able to figure it out. But yeah, you're right. I mean, obviously around that, pretty much the whole series, she clearly did not intend to make the time period important to Harry Potter, because then she went and set the epilogue in the future, which is like the crazily near future now. But
God, this year.
Yeah, but yeah. So yeah, it's hard, you know. That gets messy with canon stuff. But my gosh, if she I think a lot of us thought this was gonna fix things, and it kind of just like everything. It fixed some things, and then for as many things as it fixed, it broke other things.
Yeah. So Rita Skeeter said in her biography that Newt was never a magizoologist, but a Dumbledore spy who used magizoology as a cover to infiltrate Makusa in 1926. And Newt's like, this is an absurd claim. No undercover wizard would have chosen to pose as a magizoologist at that period. An interest in magical beasts was considered dangerous and suspect, and taking a case full of such creatures into a major city was, in retrospect, a serious mistake.
You don't say.
I love that one. Yeah.
A shame. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. That, yeah. Come on, Newt.
Mm-hmm. And then he explains he went to free a trafficked Thunderbird, which was quite risky, given that Makusa had a curse to kill policy on all magical creatures at the time.
Like, yeah, that's like lightly implied by Newt in the movie, where he says like that he's kind of on this mission as a magizoologist to ensure that people stop killing beasts. And he's implying not only that the U.S. has that policy, but that everybody kind of has that. Policy.
I'm like, that's crazy. You just see any magical beast and you're like, Avada Kedavra, done.
Like, Flavor Worm, Avada Kedavra.
That's terrible.
Yeah, God, well, Makusa seemed to have pretty terrible laws.
The U.S. government is terrible. It's okay, though, because 1 year after Newt's visit, President Serafina Pickery instituted a protective order on Thunderbirds, an edict she would eventually extend to all magical creatures. So that's nice. Thanks, Serafina.
Yeah, Serafina Pickery finally did something correctly.
Yeah, and then it was on her request that he made no mention of American magical creatures in the previous editions. Because she didn't want too much tourism, basically.
So is that like the excuse for Australia as well? And New Zealand?
Yeah, yeah, hopefully.
And everywhere else in the world? J.K. Rowling?
Outside of Europe.
So not bitter.
Yeah, because he says...
I feel like if you want to get your satisfaction for like worldly wizarding things, you probably should read Quidditch Through the Ages over in Fantastic Beasts.
Oh, I have many times. I know.
Way more than that.
It's not enough.
I was going to say, in 20 years, they'll make the Quidditch Through the Ages movie. You'll get some new additions.
I do like the fact that they are genuinely like, yeah, Australians are good at Quidditch. You've got like, yeah, the Wollongong Warriors, and that's always good. And the Thundalara Thunderers.
Yeah.
Oh man, I was happy about that.
And Rowling has also confirmed that there are like a handful more wizarding schools, and one of them is almost assuredly in Australia.
It's gotta be.
So you'll get your school.
Dude, I've gone through this. No, the population of the world does not cater for an Australian wizarding school. There has to be one in India. There has to be one in China. Like, it's just not going to work out. I've tried, man. I've tried. Doesn't work. Anyway.
Well, it's the major wizarding schools that are the ones that she's announced. Like, the way it's phrased implies that there's small ones, like little private schools.
Maybe
but
she
says
see,
the
I
Japanese
wonder if she's...
one's tiny. Why did they get a mention? I'm not bitter. I won't mention this about Australia again.
Well, see, I think to make it a little bit about Australia, you know, we do have quite a few more movies coming up, and Rowling did intentionally hold back on the rest of the schools because she was asked about, I think she was even asked specifically about Australia, and she said, oh, don't worry, there's more. And there is, listeners, for those, because of course I'm the only one who even touched Wonder Book, Book of Potions,
but that's why we keep you around.
yes, because I only because I have the weird, obscure knowledge, and Wonder Book confirms something that no other piece of material does: is that there's a wizarding school in Russia, and it does. Mm-hmm. I can't remember its name, but it does have a name. So there, and she hasn't revealed that one officially on Pottermore. So I get the sense that, you know, we have a certain
cold storage. Like, is that right?
Yeah, something like that. Something weird like that. But yeah, it's you know, the fact that she specifically held off on announcing those particular schools indicates to me that they may be saving those for something.
But she said there were 11, right? So you got, I mean, we're talking about it. I just got to get it out there, okay? So we got the Baptists, which is French. We got Hogwarts, English. We got Castelo Bruxo, which is Brazilian. Durmstrang, which I guess is Northern Europe. We've got Ilvermorny, obviously America. We've got Koldovstorets, which is the Russian one you're talking about. We've got Maho Tokoro, which is the most unimaginative name ever, and it's the Japanese one. And we have the Ouagadou one, which is in Africa. That's 8. And we have 3 left, and we need a Chinese school and an Indian school. Like, I don't know if there's going to be
enough. Where else would you put it but Australia?
Well, it's probably the Middle East. They've got a bigger population than us.
Yeah. I think she's just, like, shoved them all off to the African school. Like, she's being lazy.
Just everyone goes to Ouagadou.
Everybody goes to Ouagadou.
It's a lot of people.
But I don't know. Maybe Noodle... Australia seems to just have too many good possibilities for...
Maybe Australia is just, like... so chill that actually the wizards and muggles all know about each other and just hang out and go to the same schools.
I mean,
like, you guys just coexist over there.
Well,
don't lie to
us, anybody
Eleanor.
Told Eleanor that?
She's keeping it from us, Michael.
Oh man, I wish. There was a really nice, actually, because there was for a while, there was this girl on Tumblr, and she used to make up, like, a whole bunch of wizarding schools before J.K. Rowling came out with the 11. And, like, the one she made for Australia, she was, like, it would be set in, like, Kakadu in the Northern Territory, which is, like, one of these fantastic national parks in Australia. And, like, it would be, you know, like, north of there, and it'd be, like, its own island. And, like, oh, it just sounded so cool. And, like, just, oh, my appetite was whetted, and now nothing. Anyway, it's fine. Don't worry. Back to what we were talking about.
What were we talking about? So, yeah, he didn't include American Beasts because she didn't want more people to come and possibly breach the International Statute of Secrecy again, Newt. And he's like, yep, whatever you say, President. And then there's this great line. It says, "It would take months to contradict every wild assertion in Miss Skeeter's book. I shall simply add that, far from being, quote, the love rat who left Serafina Pickery heartbroken, unquote, the president made it clear that if I didn't leave New York voluntarily and speedily, she would take drastic steps to eject me." I'm like,
yeah.
I love that.
That's pretty great.
And then I just thought it was interesting. He specifically says he was the first person to ever capture Grindelwald.
Yeah, and also and all he had to do was just sick a swooping evil on him. It's just that easy.
And Dumbledore was something more than a school teacher to me. And then you can't say anything else. I was like, why'd you have to phrase it that way, Jim?
Yeah, that was bad phrasing.
Cool. Bisexual Newt. Anyone else thinking that? Because that's what I was.
Do we want to? I mean, no. Yeah, that we can't put that. We can't. It just no.
So anyway, as far as I know, the introduction of the book is the same. I didn't reread all that, but it looked the same when I was flipping through. And then there's no fun notes from Ron and Harry, as we said.
Boo! That's what made the book so fun.
Excuse you, the Beasts made the book so fun. So
no. Harry and Ron's hilarious notes and game and their little game of Hangman.
I mean, those were pretty good.
That's what put it over the edge.
I gotta flip to H. My God. So many H's. Okay, so the new Beasts are mostly H's. It's the hide behind... the hodag, the horn snurpent.
Ooh.
I was looking at the next word. The
I
horned
know.
Serpent, the snallygaster, thunderbird, wampus. Interestingly enough, no puckwudgie. and no swooping evil. Which at first I was like, why? But then I was like, okay, maybe.
No, you were like, you were like Eleanor, and you were like, why?
Why?
There we go.
I was like, okay, Pukwudgies possibly don't count as a beast. I mean, he talks about what is a beast a lot.
He's a being?
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the ministry's definition, they're a being.
Yeah. And then a swooping evil isn't in here because they've only re-added American beasts, and he obviously didn't pick it up in America. So there's some other reason why he doesn't have swooping evil in here.
Also, swooping evil sure would will have like an actual name. Like,
I don't know, maybe not. Evil.
Didn't he say that the swooping evil was from South America in the movie? He says where it's from.
Possibly. That sounds familiar. Do you think he just discovered it and was like, what should I name this? Evil.
He says, I could swear, I really should have watched my Blu-ray copy. I could have sworn he said,
movie, yeah.
I think he says that the locals call it the swooping evil. But I'm sure whatever it is in their language is much prettier than that. So, I think he's using the name that it's been given by the locals.
Mm-hmm.
He's just using the ugly version of the name.
I would go through and, you know, read about all of these beasts, but you guys should just buy the book. But
that's interesting, though, that like she made such a point in the writing that the swooping evil wasn't included. That certainly implies that that's going to play
be a thing,
more yeah, of a role somehow.
Because yeah, you could have just like slipped it in there and pretended it was there the whole time, but you mm-hmm. didn't. And it plays a pretty big role in the movie. It catches Grindelwald.
Is the swooping evil just going to be like catching Grindelwald at the end of every movie, and then there's going to be like a rain of forgetfulness venom?
Yeah.
That's just...
Gotta catch them all.
And then the swooping evil will be like Harry's Hedwig. And then it'll, like, mm-hmm. Grindelwald will kill it at the end because he finally figured out that the swooping evil takes him down every time.
Wait, did she specifically say the swooping evil definitely wasn't in there?
It's not in here.
Because the Snallygaster sounds like it could be a bit like a swooping evil. It's like a half reptile, half bird sort of dragon type thing with a metallic beak. And occasionally octopus tentacles, apparently.
The Snallygaster is the only one out of these that wasn't even, like, built up, right? From Pottermore or anything? That one's, like, completely new.
Yeah, as far as I know. It might have been, like, mentioned somewhere, probably, in Pottermore.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't important.
What's the Hodag? Because I feel like the Hodag was a beast we actually... Wasn't that one that Aaron used?
I think so.
It sounds like familiar.
This sounds like something Aaron would talk about. It's a horned red with red glowing eyes and long fangs the size of a large dog.
So unless, because I don't remember the Hodag being mentioned either, so that might be another brand new one. And if it's one, I could have. I'll have to look back.
I remember this. Because the magic resides largely in its horns, which, when powdered, make a man immune to the effects of alcohol and able to go without sleep for 7 days and seven nights.
So you guys did talk about this one before.
Oh yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Well,
sounds great.
We get another point for...
It feeds on moon calves.
Oh no!
Someone's got to get rid of him.
Reinstate that curse to kill.
They're overpopulating, ruining the grass, and all the Hawkeye territory.
It's confined mostly successfully to a protected area around Wisconsin, so just don't go to Wisconsin.
Okay.
That's interesting that she slipped in some beasts that weren't even built into the movie. Maybe she's prepping them for next time.
Yeah, that's nice. It's interesting, the Snallygaster is a distant relative of the Achemy.
Okay.
Oh.
Yeah.
Did Newt did he Did he snag a snallygaster and a hodag before he left the U.S.?
Maybe. Or he just has to come back. Well, the Thunderbird he didn't even find in the U.S., so...
Yeah, yeah, he found that in the wrong place, so... Who knows?
Now the most important part of this book, the about the author, which they have conveniently moved to the end so that you might not even notice it.
Yeah.
Because it was, in the previous editions, the first thing in the book.
Yep.
And it says, upon leaving Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry, instead of upon graduating.
Eleanor,
and the only other difference is it doesn't say the...
Wait, though. Eleanor.
Yeah?
Now is your moment to scream. Why?
Why?
Come on, there we go.
I'm sorry, man. It wasn't spontaneous. I just, didn't...
She wasn't ready.
Flow.
Yeah, the only other difference is it doesn't say the edition of the book, which makes sense. But yeah, leaving Hogwarts.
Mm-mm.
But, you know... I guess it was classified before that he didn't graduate, so...
Yeah, sure. Nice try.
She should have acknowledged it. Joe.
Yeah, it is funny that she didn't do that
there
one.
There was a misprint.
Yeah.
For 57 editions.
Yeah, I think this has just made it really... For those of us who want to try and line up this canon... I think this edition has just really messed things up more. Like, it's really hard to slip it in there and figure out what to do with it.
Can't they just get, like, someone who's really good at maths to just, like, sit next to J.K. Rowling every time she does something like this? And just be like, no.
Wrong.
That doesn't work.
So,
stop.
One last little thing I noticed that really isn't that important, but... Because I have the Scholastic edition here in America, but it's all, because I noticed it while looking from my old edition to the new one, that it's, the new one just keeps all of the, like, British formatting. So,
when you say formatting, what do you mean?
So, because I've read some, like, British books, in America, when we quote something, we put it in double quotes. England, it's in single quotes, and so like this edition has stuff like that, and then also there's not periods after Mr. and Mrs. in England. Okay. I don't know if spelling's different. I assume not.
I mean, are there any U's or S's
where there wouldn't be?
Well,
there's
like,
gotta
you know
be.
Curious. Or I'm not curious, yeah. It's a bad one. But like, you know, you guys take the U out, and also you guys use Z's a lot.
Z.
You mean Z's?
You guys just can't talk properly, okay? Whatever.
But yeah, I just thought that was interesting. I bet the spelling is the British way too.
I know over on Alohomora, Allison has frequently noted that, like, there's just been more, I think, of a push ever since kind of the stuff with Sorcerer's Stone and changing that title and whatnot to, like, there was more of a movement to just kind of keep it the way it was. There, I think Harry Potter definitely increased the amount of Anglophiles in the U.S.
Oh, they changed one hell of a lot, though. Like, if you look at the two editions, because I wrote a post about it, actually, I guess a month or so ago, about, like, the British versus American editions and all the words they changed. And it's just insane. Like, it's like newsreader versus reporter and, like, study schedule versus revision timetable. And you're like, are you serious? Of course you can figure out what a revision timetable is. I mean, come on. But, like, and there's, like, loads and loads of comments of, like, lots of Americans being like, I don't actually think I would have gotten that. Like, it was like, oh, okay. So I think they do still change things.
And it's like I probably wouldn't have gotten it, but did it really matter?
Actually,
is it that
important? Do you guys know the vault number, like Sirius Black's vault number at Gringotts?
What about it?
Because it wasn't in the American edition. It's in the British edition.
Huh.
out of
really, I thought fact. They mentioned Sirius's vault number in the US Why? Edition, but I could be wrong. It's been
I'm
a while.
Pretty sure they took it out, but anyway, that's what I found out when I was researching that other article. But yes,
yeah. That's weird.
Very
Everybody, go read Eleanor's article.
And before we move on, I just have to we probably should have put this in the Phoenix Register, but it was only a very recent announcement from J.K. Rowling over on Twitter. Guess what, guys? We're getting a Niffler plushie.
Oh yeah!
Yay. Oh my god, it's so cute. Go look at it on her Twitter. You'll just die. You can pre-order it. There's nobody's. I'm sure it's sold out already because it's so.
We're in a time where you pre-order a plushie.
A plushie. He's holding a little purse.
He stole it.
He's so cute.
Silly.
So if you can't find that Niffler pop, now you can have a Niffler plushie. Nippler. No, you don't want a Nippler. You want a Niffler.
No.
Ooh, words. Freudian slip. Anyway.
Oh my god.
Niffler plushie. That's all. Moving on.
That's going to be our new logo, the Niffler plushie. Just a picture of that.
You can get your Niffler plushie and name him Pastries.
I'm going to tear the coin purse out of his hand and put a stuffed cupcake in there. So he's holding a pastry. So everyone knows.
I think, Shannon, I think you have the skills to, rather than tear it, I think you have the skills to rip the stitching very gently.
I don't have the patience for that. I gotta hit this pastry in his hand now. I gotta return that coin purse, too.
It's so important.
So anyway, should we go to the time turner? Speaking of people who don't have coins.
Ooh.
Oh my god. What a segue.
Today on the time turner, I have the Great Depression.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, I was shocked that I hadn't talked about it before.
I am too.
It's a big deal.
And it's
perfect, really important.
Perfect lead-in with its timeline to... perhaps the next movie.
Yeah. So in the last episode, which I just listened to today, not on Sunday, a week and a half ago, but Lizzie talked a bit about France in the 20s and 30s and a little bit about the Great Depression hitting France. And I was like, oh yeah, I've totally talked about the Great Depression. And then I looked at my list and I was like, I have not. So I thought I'd expand on that. So the Great Depression started in America, as all great things do. I gotta hold back on these jokes, man. So it kind of started, the stocks fell drastically on September 4th, 1929, and then Black Tuesday happened October 29th, 1929, where the stock market crashed and everything was terrible. Between 1929 and 1932, the worldwide gross domestic product fell by an estimated 15%, and you can compare that to during the Great Recession in 2008-2009, it fell by less than 1%.
Oh my
yeah,
God.
But to be fair, it's a very different world. I mean, like now we're really fully globalized,
yeah.
And you've got China and India like coming up. Like, yeah, I mean it. Yeah, like it's. I mean, it, yeah, you shouldn't like put down the GFC in comparison
yeah.
to the Great Depression. I don't think like it was definitely lesser, but it's. Yeah.
I think the Great. I think would you the comparison more kind of. Shows because the Great Recession was pretty darn horrific for a lot of people, mm-hmm. and it's something that we still talk about today. It's still affecting people today. So if that's how bad it was for us now,
yeah,
I think that puts it in really like I think that really puts it in perspective just how catastrophic the Great Depression would have been at it during its time. Like, holy moly. That's really bad.
Yeah, so unemployment rose to 25% in America, but the, like, other countries, it got up to 33%. And so in France, as I mentioned in the last episode, it hit France in 1931. And Wikipedia described it as relatively mild in France, which I guess is nice. Unemployment was at 5% and there was no banking crisis. But it affected the local economy, and there was a lot of, like, political stuff that happened because of it. You know, it was still the Great Depression.
But inflation was going crazy in France at the time, wasn't it? It was like people would run to the shops in the morning to get stuff before the price dropped. Like, it might have been relatively mild, but it was still pretty, like, spectacular.
Yeah. So I was going to put in, like, more facts and stats, but then I was like, the Great Depression was great. There was a lot of it, and I couldn't possibly talk about all of it. And really what I want to get down to is, like, how will this affect Fantastic Beasts? Because, like, it's got to be acknowledged. I mean, they were talking last episode about, like, you got to acknowledge Hitler when he comes around, because that was very important. So, like, the Great Depression, it's got to have some effect on the films.
Well, we have a character who would be affected by that. Jacob runs a business.
Yeah.
So is that the reason that he can go on more adventures with them? Is because his bakery immediately closes? No.
That's terrible. But maybe. I mean, it also depends on, like, when each movie takes place. Like, because she could almost just skip the Great Depression. But I don't think she will.
Yeah, go straight to 1940s.
She can skip the Great Depression, but she can't skip World War II.
No. So. No, she's screwed herself in there.
Well, I guess... Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I guess since it doesn't hit France until 1931, she has between 1926 and 1931 to set the next movie in France without it having a huge effect. But, like, Jacob is in America. Queenie and Tina are in America. I mean, it's going to affect Jacob more, but...
Maybe it'll be kind of a background type thing, like the First World War was. Like, where it was just like, Jacob was there and he just got back, and that's all we're really going to say about that. But it happened.
Yeah, that ended up just being one of those things to, as Yeats put it, make you feel bad about Jacob. Because it didn't really inform his character at length. It was just kind of a thing about him. So, yeah, I could see
that informing his character more later, though.
Yeah, perhaps, if they so choose.
But because, if they have to fight Grindelwald and stuff, I mean, he was in a war. I mean, obviously, he's not picking up a wand. I mean, maybe he is. I say obviously, but then I'm like, well, who knows? Nothing's obvious. Luke didn't graduate Hogwarts. Like,
yeah, I because the first movie, that was something that surprised me about the first movie. I've mentioned this before. It's just that the first movie doesn't really use the backdrop to great effect. The interesting thing about the Harry Potter series is that it uses the past, especially World War II, as kind of its jumping point for its commentary on kind of social politics. But the new Fantastic Beasts film didn't really do that at all. And by including Grindelwald, inevitably she has to somehow put that in there. But it's weird because Grindelwald is also kind of a reflection of World War II, but in this case, it's happening right alongside him.
So it's harder to avoid the, like, literal subject.
Yes, yeah, it's, and that's, and how do you, because I think Rowling has, like, in some of her writings, she's brought up that wizards kind of just decided to stay out of Muggle wars because they were like, there's nothing we can do and our solutions are too quick and easy, so we'll just not help. So
I'm like, can you do that with the Great Depression? Wizards are like, oh yeah, the Great Depression didn't hit us. We were fine in our speakeasies with our legal alcohol.
Yeah. Because, and again, that was something that was very much more of a backdrop set piece than it was an actual commentary on anything. I was just so surprised that, like, Fantastic Beasts was devoid of that kind of commentary compared to Harry Potter.
I feel like she's building up to the World War II commentary because that is what Harry Potter is so much about. So it makes sense that the first movie wouldn't have as much because World War II hasn't started yet and they had to capture Wizard Hitler.
Do you think Grindelwald will commit suicide?
No, he doesn't die canonically.
Yeah, well, but I don't know, I just immediately thought of Hitler. And I was just like, hold on, that's how he went. I guess not commit suicide, that was I do know he's still alive, but like if he, I don't know, like does something where, you know, he sort of turns himself in. No, anyway.
There's definitely suspicions about what kind of brought Grindelwald down during his confrontation with Dumbledore, and I think Harry even, like, later in the book, there's a kind of a suggestion, I don't know if it's by Harry or Dumbledore, I think Harry mentions to Dumbledore that Grindelwald didn't betray the location of the wand, kind of implied that maybe Grindelwald kind of thought about what he did all that time in prison.
Well, that's something interesting about this series is it's like we know that they defeat the big bad, but we also know he lives and is in prison for the rest of his life.
Yeah,
prison.
Yeah, it's interesting that this. I feel like more of this kind of playing with history stuff is really more Rowling's forte, and it's funny that she's not doing it here as much with Fantastic Beasts as I kind of wanted. I think it's because she ended up taking more of the focus towards Grindelwald, which I'm really disappointed with. I wanted that to be the backdrop, and I wanted the actual history to be more the thing she toyed with Newt. I think that's why we're all, as fans, having a really hard time seeing where this is going and what she's going to do with it, because this is just a whole new issue we're dealing with in the Wizarding World fandom. But as far as the Great Depression goes, since it didn't have as much of an effect on France, I mean, it's kind of funny that she chose France and it didn't have much of an effect.
Was that on purpose?
So maybe
she was like,
was.
Which country had the least of the Great Depression? France. Perfect.
Perfect. Not a problem. Don't even have to write about that. So, yeah, I think there's just like there's just been such a pile on of stuff that she's dealing with in Fantastic Beasts. The first movie already shows that there's just so much that she's trying to focus on. Because I think a lot of people, there was a lot of feeling from critics that kind of the stuff with the second Salemers felt like it was its own separate plot and its own kind of other movie versus the Beast thing. And then you got all the individual characters and their story arcs or lack thereof. So it's, I think maybe there was an element where she was just like, who did this not affect? France. Okay, perfect. That's great. We have a school there and everything. Let's send him there.
Well,
I feel like we've been dragging J.K. Rowling and Fantastic Beasts a lot in this episode, so let me just take a moment to say I love Fantastic Beasts.
We
criticize the things we love.
Yes, you can be critical of what you love.
But especially when it's aimed at adults. I reckon.
Yeah.
That's the thing with Harry Potter. She gets lots of free passes because it's like, it's a children's series. Whereas with Fantastic Beasts, I'm like, I'm quite happy to go in hard because I'm just like, this is meant to be rated M. Like,
yes, it's for okay. us.
We couldn't possibly talk about this for 34 episodes without criticizing it. We'd run out of things.
I would like to see Fantastic Beasts, like the question you asked, Shannon. I would like to see Fantastic Beasts have more of that commentary and in the future.
I would like it.
Yeah. I'm hoping to see.
Let's get dark and gritty. You know, Harry Potter movies kept getting darker. That's what they always said. Let's desaturate Fantastic Beasts. Let's open the newt case.
And now it's time for the newt case. So once again, because I'm Australian and because for some reason every time I'm on Speak Beastie, I talk about Australia a lot.
It's good. I like it.
It's just every time.
Yes, we love your pride.
It's like, I'm so
patriotic. The nationalism, it's beautiful. It's
like, just... I don't care about Australia at all when I'm in Australia. But, like, you know, I talk to people who are, like, from anywhere else, and I'm like, Australia! Anyway, so, obviously, on that, I chose an Australian mythical creature, which is probably the most well-known Australian mythical creature, actually. The Bunyip. So, basically, I don't think anyone actually knows what it looks like. There's just lots of, like, descriptions and people reckon they've seen it and all this kind of stuff, but we don't really know. But basically, it came out of Australian Aboriginal mythology, and the Australian Aboriginal people, obviously the people who were here for 40,000 years before white people came and settled or invaded, depending on your point of view, here 200 years
colonized.
Ago. Colonized. Yep. Whatever you colonized, whatever you like. So basically the Bunyip is said to live in like swamps and billabongs and creeks and riverbeds and waterholes. It's basically some kind of water monster. Usually there's a kid's storybook where it's like, it's about this billabong that like comes up out of a billabong, there's a bunyip that comes out of a billabong like at midnight, and it's like just covered in mud and you still don't know what it looks like. It's just extremely irritating. But apparently the word comes from Aboriginal people in southeastern Australia, because obviously there are hundreds and hundreds of tribes across the whole of Australia. The particular word comes from southeastern Australia, which was apparently the Wemba Wemba or Wagaya language, if you're a linguist. But basically, even though name comes from there, the iterations of the Bunyip type creature are just found all across Australia. Basically some stuff, it was funny because in the 19th century, I think, white people weren't really sure if bunyips were like real or not. So,
probably really freaking out because Australia has so many crazy things. They were just like, that sounds believable.
Yeah, they weren't quite sure. There's like lots of stuff where like they thought they were finding it, or they thought they found a fossil of it, or, you know, like they were never quite sure, but basically,
I mean, can you imagine when white people like first encountered a kangaroo? Like they were just like, what? So the idea of the bunyip probably didn't seem that far off to them.
Oh, definitely. And like we've got you know, platypuses, obviously, so like duck-billed sort of warm-blooded furry creatures that lay eggs. You know, like, no one understands. But basically there are actually 19th century newspaper accounts of bunyips, and like they it really shows people didn't know what they looked like, because it was like a dog-like face, a crocodile-like head, dark fur, a horse-like tail, flippers, walrus-like tusks or horns, or a duck-like bill. So it kind of sounds like it's like the Loch Ness Monster plus a platypus.
People just saw something in Australia and was like, is that a bunyip?
Yeah,
and someone was like, yeah, it must be.
Yeah, it sounds to me like they saw a platypus and was like, a bunyip. And then they turned around and they saw a kangaroo and they were like, no, that's a bunyip. they had no idea.
Yeah, if you do like an image search, you just like, all these different things come out because no one knows. But also, in the spirit of Easter, actually, there is also like, an Australian story. There are a couple of Australian stories because rabbits in Australia are feral creatures and we hate them so much. Because they compete with the local wildlife for food and stuff, and mm-hmm. Australia doesn't have very much of that, so that's why it's an issue. So basically there's stories about how bunyips will bring the chocolate Easter eggs here, or like bilbies, which are sort of little rabbit-eared type bandicoot thing that lives in Australia as well, but that's a real creature.
That's so funny, because when I was hearing the name bunyip, I was like, so is it like a bunny?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Well, according to some reports, yes.
Shocking.
We're not quite sure, but yeah. So yeah, the bunyip.
That's also funny to hear that rabbits are considered a pest, because here they're just adorable.
Depends on your perspective, because some people like that. What happened in my high school, my friend had a rabbit. She absolutely loved this rabbit, but my other friend was from the country, and the friend that had the rabbit was like, oh, you know, like I love them, and like, oh, they're so beautiful. And my other friend was like, oh, when we see them, we swerve to hit them in the countryside. My other friend was just like, I'm going to cry. Depend. There's definitely an urban-rural divide when it comes to rabbits.
When it comes to the rabbit. That's funny. Wow. See, the bunyip to me, as far as like if I were to try and fit it into Rowling's canon, it kind of sounds like a Kelpie.
Yeah.
The whole shape shifting thing, and then the affinity for water.
Yeah.
Definitely. If she used it, she would probably just fold it in as a Kelpie.
An Australian species of Kelpie.
I'm getting a little tired of her just folding everybody's beasts into one beast. mm-hmm. She's done that a few times now, and no, I mean, I could see how this would fit like perfectly with her definition of the Kelpie.
Yeah, definitely.
Especially because it never looks the same to people. I like it as its own thing, though. Especially because, yeah, I did just look it up, some of the pictures on Google Images, and what the heck? Like, this is crazy.
It's freaky.
Yeah. This one that's like, ooh, this, like, one that, this black and white one that's, like, crawling out.
Some of them are terrifying, and others are quite cute. Like, there's one that looks a bit like a rabbit-type kangaroo thing. Like, it's got floppy ears. Anyway, it's quite bizarre.
17 best images about bunyip on Pinterest. Hell yeah, take me there.
Yeah, all of these are, like, completely different. You're right. There is not one picture book
that I have just discovered called Panda and the Bunyips. And the image of the cover, this is by Michael Foreman, is a panda riding a griffin waving at what must be a bunyip on the ground.
Wait, Panda and the Bunyip? Panda and the Bunyip.
That is so not how I would imagine a bunyip. There you are.
Yeah, that bunyip looks like a niffler with teeth.
Yeah.
Like a crazy niffler. Like a niffler that's looks like a, gone feral.
Yeah.
An
amphibious niffler.
I think some people thought, because we have diprotodons here, like they were our, like, I guess, megafauna, you know, like mammoths and everything other people have. Mm-hmm. And like, I think there was some stuff about how maybe the bunyip tails were kind of related to the diprotodon, which is basically just a giant wombat. But I know that was a theory. Ages ago. I don't know where I found that, so don't quote me.
This picture of a bunyip is just a shark with hands and feet. No, I do not like it. Like, it's literally, it's a shark with, I think the hands are webbed, but
The one I'm really that, if you fan. Can see, I don't know if you can see it, but it's the Bunyip of Berkeley's Creek. That's like a really classic Australian picture book. I think that's how a lot of people probably imagine a bunyip. I think that one's just like, what the hell? But anyway, if you're interested.
Oh, yeah, the Bunyip of Berkeley's Creek. Oh, yeah, it's like a little picture book. Yeah, look at that. Oh, yeah.
I found a bunyip stamp.
Wow.
The Bunyip of Natural History.
See, Rowling, you can't fold it in with a Kelpie because it has its own stamp.
Yeah, it looks like an otter with scaly bits.
Although I bet you that she already folded the Loch Ness into the Kelpie, and I'm sure the Loch Ness probably has a stamp, so never mind. She can do what she wants.
I mean, that's true. She could have just very easily been like, Loch Ness is a monster. And instead she was like,
Kelpie.
Let's logic it out a little bit.
So, still not throwing a bone for Australia, it sounds like, if we try
it. It would be a Kelpie.
It would be.
Definitely. But an Australian
Sorry,
version.
Eleanor. You got Eleanor, you gotta dig deeper for the most obscure thing in Australia you can find. Like, start looking under rocks and logs.
And just... All normal creatures in Australia are actually fantastic beasts.
Yes.
Well, yeah.
Yes. But yeah. No, Australia for muggles is the fantastic beasts capital of the world.
We do have some really cool... Oh, there was this really cool little thing, and it was like a desert dragon. Also, if you look up a thorny devil, they are so cool. God, they're so cute. And they're like, yeah, they're like a fantastic beast. My dad kept a thorny devil when he was like a kid, actually. But they're crazy little things.
I think every time Eleanor is on, she should be in charge of the Newt case to just tell us about things that live in Australia.
Oh my god, I looked up the thorny devil. This isn't real.
No, it is. It genuinely is. They're really cute.
You have uploaded every single picture of this weird thing that you made.
Oh, I've seen the thorny devil before.
Specifically to fool me in this moment.
No, they're really cute, see? They're quite small.
Oh my goodness, look
really
at it
spiky.
Rolling itself up. They it's are. Like eating its own tail. It's so cute.
Oh my god.
It's adorable.
Babies.
So, as we close up the Newt case, before we head out here, we want to make sure and put forth our bi-weekly, podcast question. And as we discussed, our main discussion, the new edition of Fantastic Beasts attempted to rationalize some issues of canon brought about by the new film. However, certain new details ended up creating more contradictions. Good job, Rowling. So, that said, listeners, how do you feel about these new additions and alterations, and what do you think will occur in future editions of Fantastic Beasts, as well as the films, to maybe remedy those issues that she created? And do you think you can rationalize any of that with the already established canon? You can send in your thoughts on that, as well as your other fantastic theories, comments, questions, anything. We'd love to hear from you. A song? You want to sing the Goblin's jazz song from the movie? Send us that by Owl or any of our social media outlets, or email us at speakbeastie@gmail.com.
I was going to say you can totally send us singing a song from Beauty and the Beast.
Oh, so. Yes, please. God, yes.
I'm so excited.
Oh, yes. Oh, my God.
But if you don't want to do that, you can leave us a review on iTunes, because we would love to know what you think of us. Hopefully it's good things.
Michael, stop talking about Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah. If you want to tell Michael to stop talking about Beauty and the Beast, then you can do that on iTunes. Or you can tweet at us at SpeakBeastie, or follow us on Instagram at SpeakBeastie, and Facebook at facebook.com/SpeakBeastie, Tumblr at SpeakBeastiePodcast.tumblr.com, and check out our awesome website, which is just SpeakBeastie.com.
Shout out to all of you who have been contacting us. I saw a lot of you telling us that you really enjoyed the corrective Time Turner segment I did about the Salem witch trials. So thank you for that. I'm glad to have made up for that egregious, horrible error in the first episode I was on. So we always love hearing that feedback from you guys. So thank you.
I'm Shannon.
I'm Michael.
And I'm Eleanor. Case closed.
I'm Shannon.
I'm Michael.
And I'm Eleanor.
Who says...
You can say it, Eleanor.
Yeah, Eleanor says
What do I say?
Case closed.
Oh, I thought we weren't doing that anymore. I thought I said that once and you guys were all like, no. And I was like, okay.
What? Anyway. What show were you on? Like,
that was the like thing that they used to have in the dark that was like, thank you for listening to the episode.
Oh, yeah.
And we never said that.
Yeah.